There's a boat in the dock, and early at 5 o'clock is a man with his pipe and plaid beret. He has fish in the sea calling out to him with glee, sailor, won't you come and catch me?
Good morning and welcome to A Fine Kettle of Fish, KMUN's Lower Columbia's local seafood show on 5th Mondays at 9:30 a.m. I'm your host, Jennifer Burns-Bright, and I'm an advocate for local seafood and the hardworking people who research, fish, and cook up the catch of the day. Today's show is about a crustacean beloved by many, the Dungeness crab. Traditionally considered a holiday treat in the Pacific Northwest, we love them simply cracked and chilled, where their sweet and tender meat smell faintly of the sea on a brisk winter day. To showcase that delicate flavor, we like them best just simply dipped in drawn butter or turned into golden crab cakes. Dungeness has a long history as a moneymaker for European settlers, almost as long, in fact, as European settlement in the area. In 1848, commercial crabbers in San Francisco established the Dungeness fishery, and by the early 1900s had put in place regulations very similar to what we have now to help sustain the populations. According to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, dungies are the most valuable single-species commercial fishery in Oregon, citing an average of about 16 million pounds of crab per season as a long-term average over 25 years. Recently, the industry has experienced pressure from both economic and environmental realities that have resulted in later openings. The commercial opener for ocean crabbing is set based on tests on crabs up and down the coast. Crabs must have a certain percentage of meat filling their shells, about 25%, give or take, depending on where you are, and test clean for a worrisome neurotoxin called domoic acid, which accumulates in fish, shellfish, and crustaceans as they eat poisoned algae. These little fish then sicken or cause deaths of birds and mammals up the food chain. It's apparently the same organism that causes red tides, and I recently read a theory that domoic acid was the cause of the crazy avian behavior that inspired Alfred Hitchcock's film, The Birds. So you gotta watch out. This year, the season for our area opens December 31st, tomorrow. And it's always a bit tense as the boats go out to set their gear a few days ahead of the opener and the intense price negotiations that take place. Just a few quarters per crab can dramatically affect a fisherman's income, especially crucial if the season opens later in the year. It's a particularly dangerous occupation as they go out in stormy and freezing cold conditions and work with heavy gear. Lives are lost every single year on the coast to bring us crab, so I'm always glad to pay premium prices for these little guys and use up every last bit, even the shells, for seafood stock. And we can talk about that a little bit later. More importantly, I'm here today with John Corbin, an Oregon Dungeness Crab Commissioner based in Seaside, who owns several boats that fish in Oregon, Washington, and Alaska. He's known for his work on fishery management and his fair approach to difficult issues, and I hear he's also a pretty great home cook, too. I hope he'll help us understand more about this special creature. Welcome to A Fine Kettle of Fish, John.
Yeah, good morning, Jennifer.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Excellent.
I'm good.
You're revving up for a pretty important day tomorrow.
Yeah, the boys have been out setting their pots, and there's a 73-hour pre-soak time that you can get the gear in the water. And then tomorrow at 9 a.m., start pulling the pots and loading the crab on board.
Excellent. So are the pots actually getting the crab to come into them right now, or are they
opened up? Yeah, they're baited.
Okay, they're baited and ready to go. So you're going to be pulling them up tomorrow starting at 9 o'clock.
Right.
And this is when we celebrate.
Yes.
Awesome.
Although we've got a lot of nasty weather coming up this week. So
yeah, that's what I hear.
It's going to be a little tough.
Okay. Given everything goes well, when can we expect crab in the market if you're pulling them up at 9 a.m.?
Well, I would think that there will be deliveries that day and that night. And by the time they get them processed or whatever, probably the next day, the first.
All right. So we can do our New Year's Day celebrations
right.
with Dungeness crab.
Right.
Excellent. So tell us about your fleet. You've got a three-state permits in three different states. Are they mainly crabbers, or what do your boats do?
I have two that are down here working the coast. They are fishing in Oregon and Washington out of the Columbia River here. So they are they'll fish pots on both sides of the river. One of the boats fishes shrimp later on, and then the other one fishes black cod. And then in the summer, they both go up to Alaska, one tendering salmon, one fishing black cod. And then we also have a boat in Alaska that just stays there year-round.
So. And does that boat do crab up in Alaska?
No, he does cod. He's out in Adak right now, out in the Aleutian Islands, way out there.
Wow.
Fishing cod, and then he'll do halibut and black cod and tender salmon as well.
Nice. Oh, that sounds great. So what brought you into crabbing and into commercial fishing? Did you grow up with it, or family connection? Or
no, there's no family connection, but when I was in high school, mm-hmm. I spent the summers working on charter boats out of Hammond and taking people out sport fishing, and I had such a great time. I loved it, and made good money being a deckhand and just entertaining people all the time. But a lot of the people that I knew or that I worked with, they also crabbed in the winter, but I was going to high school. Hmm. And when I got out of high school, I worked the boats in the summer, and then I went in the Air Force. And but when I got out of the Air Force, I came home. I was home for 1 hour, and it was in May.
One whole hour.
I was home for an hour, and I got a call, do you want to go shrimping? And I said, absolutely. And that's what started it. And shrimp went all summer and then turned into crab in the winter. And that was 41 years ago and still doing it.
You never looked back.
No, never did.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. And then you are a commissioner for the Dungeness Crab Commission in
yes.
Oregon. And what do you do for the commission? Tell us a little bit more about what the role of that organization
well,
is.
Well, I've been on the Oregon Dungeness Crab Commission for 10 years now. I've been a commissioner. And what we do is marketing, promotion, education, and research. So it runs the gamut. Of course, we go to a lot of trade shows. And we promote Oregon Dungeness crab. We do a lot of research to help the industry. We've got different projects going on right now. We've also gone into the schools. We, a few years ago, did a program with the fifth grade class at Seaside. And it was, over the whole year, it was not just crab, but it was all the seafood.
That's amazing.
And it was... It was a great program.
I've
and
seen
it was
that
really,
curriculum. It's,
yeah, it
was
really
very
neat
comprehensive,
to,
wasn't it? Yeah.
It was really neat to see how the kids just soaked it all up, and the questions that they asked were just amazing.
Yeah.
They're really neat.
Could you remember any question that was particularly funny or cute?
Oh, I can't think of anything. Yeah, I know there was because we had such a great time.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, I'm sure they asked just about everything you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so let's get back to that, to the crab pots that are now sitting there at the bottom of the ocean.
Yes.
When a boat goes out, could you just kind of describe exactly what happens? You did a moment ago, but I would just like to really think about this. So how do commercial crabbers catch crab? They've got all that big gear. What do they do with it?
Well, we have a hydraulic crab block that pulls them up, and it pulls them up very quickly.
Hmm. Are we talking seconds or minutes to get them up?
Yeah, I mean, if we're fishing out in the deep where we have up to 600 feet of line,
wow,
it takes about a minute, but... When you're on the beach, it takes about 10, 15 seconds to pull the pots up. And then you land the pot, you dump the crab out, you change the bait. You take out the old bait bags, put in new bait that you've already baited up with either like squid or razor clams or tuna or all sorts of different things. And then as the captain is driving up onto the next pot, you then let it go and reach out and grab the next one and start the whole thing over.
So the guys still need to, and ladies still need to pull up the pot onto the boat, right? Or does
well,
the hydraulics do that?
The hydraulics lift it up over your head, and then
see.
You just land it.
Okay.
So yeah, it just has to fall down.
Yeah, and what would an average? I know boats are all different sizes, but say like one of your boats. How much does it hold? How many pounds of crab can you pull in at once?
Well, my small boat will pack about 28,000 pounds of crab, and my larger boat will hold a little over 50,000.
Oh, amazing. So double the size.
But
almost.
We have boats out there that'll hold 100,000 pounds, and we have boats that'll hold 5,000, 6,000 pounds or even less.
So it seems like there's a big variance in the kinds of boats that can go out there and do that work.
There really is, and it's changed a lot over the years. Some of the boats that I started out with, there was a lot of the old wooden trollers, and there were charter boats that put a crab block on and went fishing. And over the years, it's gotten a little more competitive, bigger steel boats and things. But we still have a little bit of the other boats mm-hmm. involved as well.
Interesting. It seems like such a dramatic fishery to me because of the weather, what you're fighting
yeah.
and all that. So how is the season looking so far? Do you have any projections for what might happen, or do we not know at all
well,
yet?
Well, the only projection, at the Crab Commission, we have a guy that does a megalope study, which megalope are the little larva crab.
Oh, megalope.
And
okay.
he does a study for us every year, and he's always been within about 12% of being able to predict what will happen for the year. I can't remember. I think he predicted about 20 million last year. We had 18 million. But this year, they're predicting a slower year. His predictions are at 8 million.
Oh, that's much slower.
Yeah. And
wow.
so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We always, on these down years, we like to think he's really, really wrong.
Right, of course.
But he's usually
is.
Pretty good. but
bad.
He's got us predicted next year for 25 million.
Wow.
So.
Is the Dungeness crab, is the population one of those populations that kind of swings biannually, or does it?
Well, it's not biannually, but it's cyclical, and it's usually about a seven-year cycle.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So this is pretty much within normal, well,
yeah,
we're going to hope
it's
for the best. We're going to hope for the best.
Yes. It's been going up and down for years and years and years. And, you know, we sometimes get, I would say bad press sometimes when the season is down that, oh, the sky is falling, but it's not. It's just what crab do.
Mm-hmm.
So
cyclical. Now, I guess that kind of brings up that question of sustainability. So
yes.
I know that there are regulations in place about the kinds of crab that you can pull and when you can pull them. Can you tell us a little bit about the season and the other ways to regulate crab commercially?
Well, typically what we've done, and it seems like it's going to start getting a little bit more complicated here, but we refer to it as size, sex, and season.
The three S's.
The three S's. The male Dungeness crab over 6 1/4 inches long are the only ones that we can harvest. They are the old men.
Mm-hmm.
The young breeders and the females we leave in the water. And so by the time they're 6 1/4, they're usually the old guys. It's time to, I hate to say that because I'm getting that point myself. I'm the old guy now.
Right.
But it's time for them
watch
to go and bring in the young guy, leave the young guys. So,
and about how old are they when they are that size?
I think they're around 5 years old when
okay.
they're getting to that size.
Mm-hmm.
And so we only catch them, and of course only the males, not the females.
Mm-hmm.
And then the season, we close the season down when the crab are molting.
That's generally in the summer, right?
Yes, during the fall.
Oh, in the fall. Okay.
We close down, I guess it is still somewhat summer, in August 14th.
Mid-August, yeah.
And we close down then until December 1st while the crabs shed their shells and refill. So mm-hmm. they get a new shell. They're just like butter, you know, they're just really soft like paper. And then they start feeding and they fill out with meat, harden the shell up and fill out with meat. And that just goes on and on and on. And so, as you said earlier, they need to get up to about 23 to 25% meat fill, and then we can harvest them.
And so they continue to develop, do they taste sweeter or less sweet as the season goes on? Is it the best to buy them right now?
Yeah, now is a great time because they are at their meat fill. They will only get up to about 30%. 29-30% is about all that they will fill out to. But yeah, the fuller they are, I mean, you get more meat for your buck. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. if we were to go out there and harvest 20% crab, The difference between that and 30% is you'd get 50% more meat. Mm. And so, you know, we want to make sure that the crab are in great shape and they're nice and full, so that when you crack that open, it's not empty. There's good stuff inside.
Yeah, that would be quite a disappointment.
Yeah.
So you are listening to A Fine Kettle of Fish on Coast Community Radio. We're talking about crab with Oregon Dungeness Crab Commissioner John Corbin. And since we're talking about delicious meaty crab, I think it's time to turn over to recipes, which is what I really wanted to bring you here to talk about.
Yeah.
I love to cook. So I assume that you like to crack and pick your own.
Yes.
So for me, the most important question is, are you a stockpiler or are you an eat-as-you-go man?
You know, I think I've changed over time because I used to be an eat-as-I-go.
Mm-hmm.
I had people around me stockpiling, you know, and it was just like, I don't know how you do that. I just can't do it. I'm just eating.
Yep. I have no restraint.
But I kind of eat a little bit as I go, but I start stockpiling now. So I've developed over time.
So with age comes wisdom and, you know, the need
to
amass
to think
your
so,
wealth.
Yes.
Awesome. So do you have any tips for a newbie, someone who has never cracked their own crab and they're going to just try it this season for the first time?
Oh, you know, it's, I've watched videos. If you ever go down to one of the processors, mm-hmm. And we've had videos, it's amazing to watch a processor pick that crab. They actually call it shaking.
Oh, how fast, yes.
And mm-hmm. they actually take the legs and they just bang them and bang the meat right out of them. And the body meat, it's got all that cartilage in there, and they just kind of squeeze it and crunch it a little bit, and then they shake it all out. And it's just amazing. I had a guy, we were at the Oregon State Fair, and we had that video playing, and people just crowding all around. And I couldn't resist. Everybody's standing there, and they go, how do they do that? And I said, well, you could do that too, except you usually have a beer in one hand while you're trying to crack with the other. These guys are using two hands. So.
Yeah. And I just taught a class in Seaside at the library on crab, so how to do that. And so I tried. I did look at that video, and I tried to do it. And it just made such a holy mess. I don't know how to contain it.
Yeah. I mean, I like to tell that story, and people would see the video. But I can't do it.
It's hard.
I pick it all out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you can use all kinds of different cracking tools and picking tools and all that. I usually crack with my hands. And I take that very tip, the very tip of a leg there, that sharp piece, that's my picker.
Yes, it's got its own natural picker in the crab.
You just break that off. There's no meat in that anyway. And then whatever pieces you have, you can dig it out with that.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
a great tip.
You don't have to have the fancy tools. It's built right into the crab.
Excellent. Good to know. Okay, so what should we look for if we're buying crab in the market?
Look for crab. But, you know, I think one of the things is the posted weight on the crab.
So we're looking for bigger ones or smaller ones?
Well, it's not so much big or small, but I think if you start to see a whole cooked crab that you're buying in the market and it's only going to weigh a pound and a quarter or something like that, it's going to be a little lighter. You aren't going to get as much meat. You're going to pay less for it, but you're going to get less meat out of it.
Oh, okay. So we want heavy.
Yeah, heavier crab. I mean, if you get a 2-pound crab or something, you've got a lot of meat in there. So that's what I usually do is just try to look for something that's a little heavier, you know, a pound and 3/4 or so.
Okay, that's a great tip. All right, so now we need to ask some of your favorite ways to eat crab, to cook and eat crab. What do you do?
Well, I've had a lot of different recipes. A guy at church yesterday handed me a recipe for crab bisque, and I've never made it myself, but the recipe looked awesome. I'm going to have to do it now.
Nice, with a cream base?
Yeah.
Mm.
I've made cioppino once for a Super Bowl party, which has all sorts of seafood in it, but one of the main ingredients is crab. So that was good. I made some recipes for a TV shoot a while back.
Ooh, let's hear about that.
I made deviled eggs. Made a a lemon, a Meyer lemon aioli for that, but with Dungeness crab meat mixed in to the yolk that you make.
Oh, beautiful!
And then topped with a fry leg.
Oh, nice!
The big meat part of the crab topped on top of that.
So a nice chunk of meat.
Yeah,
on top.
Those were really, really good. And another one that I made that I really loved was an avocado, bacon, lettuce, and crab sandwich on a croissant roll.
Wow. So was it a crab salad or fried crab cake? Or what? How did you do the crab on that?
It was just fry legs, meat, whatever. Mm. But it was amazing. I couldn't believe how good it was.
That
when we got done
delicious.
With the shoot, I took them down to the break room there, and boy, everybody from the TV station came roaring down, and there's crab in the house. And so,
excellent.
You know, crab cocktails are very easy.
Simple and easy. Yep.
Yeah, they're very simple.
Classic.
I love cocktail sauce. The nice. More horseradish in it, the better for me. I love a nice tart cocktail sauce. So.
Awesome. That sounds great. Do you do crab cakes?
I've never made them.
Hmm.
I've never made them myself. I love them.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. And they're really good. I need to do that sometime. But it's one of those, as you say, too, it's like you get going and next thing you know, all the meat is gone. And you think, well, now I'm not going to cook anything. I ate it all.
Right. That's the problem with crab.
Right.
And I want to experiment a lot. But then I, just basically get to a point where, like, I just want to eat this.
Yes. Yes.
So I did have... When I was living down in Port Orford, before I moved to Astoria, I had the bounty one year of someone who gave me a whole bunch of crab because I wanted to get rid of it. And then I got to experiment a little bit. So I did do some experimentation with crab cakes. And what I really like to do is I like to do them in the Baltimore style. So they're kind of like a giant, big ice cream scoop full of mostly crab. I do a little bit of bread cubes instead of bread crumbs. Yeah. And then I bake them instead of frying them. I just put a little bit of seasoned butter on top. And
nice.
Those are really yummy because you can really, I focus on just, using as big pieces of crab as I can. And baking it, so it's sort of healthy-ish, but
hey,
it's kind
of
a nice.
All crab's healthy.
Yeah, right. It's a
good
breakfast.
Yeah, I have to get that recipe. That sounds
yeah,
good.
Yeah, I'm happy to give it to you. And then I have to say my favorite crab recipe, and I just discovered this a couple years ago. I mean, it kind of blew my mind because I thought that just eating crab was, absolutely the pinnacle of anything you can do, just eating that fresh crab picked right from the shell. But this is a Chinese preparation, and I discovered that you can use it with leftover crab legs as well as with, just uncooked crab legs. So what you do with that is you take, say you got, two leftover crab. I can't imagine ever being in that situation, but say you were, okay? You take all the legs off, and then you coat them in a little bit of potato starch, which is, kind of like a corn starch, but it's a little bit more, gummy is not the right word, a little more saucy, I guess. When you put liquid with it. So coat it with the potato starch, and then you hit it with soy sauce and rice wine and ginger and garlic, and you actually stir fry it. So a sauce that's kind of sticky and sweet and salty accumulates on the legs themselves.
Uh-huh.
Then throw a whole bunch of scallions in there and serve it. So it only takes like maybe a minute to do the stir fry to sauce them all up. And you can use the leftover crab and you just eat it. And so you get all that sticky sauce on your fingers as you're cracking it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like, it is divine. It's so good. Yeah. It's my second favorite recipe and I do it every year now. That's probably my new favorite.
Well, one thing about crab and I'll just go back to the simplicity is like,
sure,
there'll be a lot of crab feeds coming up here in the near future. I know the Warrenton Deep Sea Fishermen's Benefit Fund they always put one on in Warrenton in January. And,
oh, good. I'll put an announcement about that on my website just so everyone knows.
Yeah, and there will be lots of others, but the simplicity of it. And one of the things, is getting in there and cracking the crab yourself.
Mm.
To just sit down with a bowl of crab meat, I mean, that is awesome. But to just sit down with that all by yourself and without the cracking experience and to be around other people. And I love serving crab in a group.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
It's the fellowship of everybody being together and spending time and cracking the crab and eating it. And no matter whether you eat it as you go or stockpile it, but it's great for family events and social events and whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's what's important, right? I mean, it's the conviviality. It's coming together right. as a group. And I think that's why the crab feeds are always so successful, because
oh, yeah.
you do get to kind of like all come around and share that experience together. And
yeah.
that's absolutely the best in dining, I think,
yeah.
you could possibly ask for.
Yeah.
Another question. One more, probably. So what do you do? Do you eat the mustard? I know that that's kind of a concern with domoic acid. Do you just clean out the innards every time, or do you like that kind of taste of that slightly bitter, creamy?
Yeah, I don't. It's also referred to as the butter.
The butter, yeah.
The butter. And no, I don't. And I think it's because of the toxins that we've had over the last several years. And so... That's where a crab stores that.
The toxin. Yeah. So we want to rinse it out, or what do we do with it?
Yeah, I mean, I rinse okay. it all off and discard it.
Okay.
And I know there are people that like it, and my hat's off to you, but nowadays with the different toxins around, and a crab doesn't normally store it in the meat.
So the meat's okay.
The meat's okay unless it's been a long, long, long time and very, very high levels. Mm. It can start to sink into the meat a little bit. But typically, even when we've had really high domoic levels, it's been just negligent to nothing in the meat. So there's no problems.
That's really good to know. So we have a couple more minutes. Do you want to send out a message to the fishermen who are out there pulling their pots and getting ready for a great season?
Well, basically, just stay safe, guys. You know, we do have some big weather coming up here over this next week. I see on the horizon winds up to 50. And,
oh, dear.
Seas up to 21 feet.
Oh, my gosh.
Everyone has a different tolerance for weather. A lot of it has to do with the size of your boat, but a lot of it has to do with the individual, how much they are willing to stay out there and tolerate. But just be safe. And, you know, if it's too much for you, come in. And that's just, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about and praying over, you know, people that are out there. And I just want them all to come home.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the best we can hope for, and
yeah.
Come home safe, even if their boats aren't as full as they might want to be.
Right.
Got to come home safe.
Right.
All right, wonderful. Well, I wanted to say thank you so much for coming out. I know it's a busy time for you, and I really appreciate it, and it's kind
absolutely.
Of spreading the word about this wonderful industry that we have here, Dungeness Crab, Oregon's favorite. And I also wanted to thank this week's fabulous engineer, Dylan Hauser-Schalk. John, I hope you have a great season, and I hope you get millions and millions of crab coming in for you and for all the others who are served by the Dungeness Crab Commission. And all my best for many safe and very plentiful returns. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
You.
There's a boat in the dock, and early at 5 o'clock is a man with his pipe and plaid beret. He has fish in the sea, calling out to him with glee. Sailor, won't you come and catch me?